Welcome to the Travelling Senorita, episode 190. I'm out and about in what I would call country Queensland, but it's not far from the border. So as you know, I live in northern New South Wales. I spent a lot of time in Brisbane, and I have discovered more to the scenic rim this time than I had ever known before. And it's this particular place called Mount Barney. And I did some research with fellow travellers and friends, and not a lot of people had heard about Mount Barney. So it made me even want to come here even more. As you know, on Travelling Senorita, I like to uncover in an organic, nice way, destinations that may have not been talked about before. So today I'm going to be sitting down with somebody that is relatively new to the area as well, but has a fantastic story as to how she landed here and how an early educator, child teacher, in childcare, then crosses over to owning an incredible vineyard and cottages on the base of Mount Barney. Please welcome Aspen Forgan. How are you?
Hello, how are you going?
I'm good. Did I get that early childcare?
Early childhood educator. Yeah.
That's a long term.
It
isn't
is. It is.
That's why you said teacher.
Yeah.
Now, I'm really intrigued on your story. Firstly, I'm sitting on the property of 40 acres of just stunning, lush green land underneath Mount Barney. And I'm like, talking to your husband and yourself, young family, I'm like, how did you come to be here? And then we've just discussed your whole story, and I can see how the puzzle fits together. But firstly, tell me about growing up in a family of seven and what you learned from that and where you grew up.
Yeah, so Brendan, my husband, and I, we both grew up in Sydney, in the Sutherland Shire, so that's kind of in southern Sydney, and I was one of seven, so for me, family is a really important value, well, for both of us, for Brendan and I, family is a very important value, and so I think that's really also instilled this whole value of community and connection, and we can talk about it a bit later, but when we're here and we talk and communicate with all of our guests, you know, we try and see them as an extension of our family, and, you know, we...
I can feel that. I can actually feel that when I came here and I just met your in-laws as well. And I said, I feel like I'm part of the family.
Yeah.
I've only been here for 24 hours. But that to me is hospitality, like community hospitality. All the things that you and I were talking about, being one of seven and what that instilled in you as a young girl. And you did grow up, I guess, you say you grew up in Sydney, but there was almost a little bit of a regional area outside of Sydney, isn't it? The Shire.
Yeah, like it's still Sydney, but I suppose when we grew up there, 30 years ago, there was still a little bit of farmland there. We were surrounded by national park and bushland and things like that. So even though we're in the city, we've always grown up with nature, with the rivers, beaches, and those sorts of things. So I think when you grow up with that, you kind of just are drawn to it again, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that also with the amount of times you've moved around, because you said with Brendan and his job, you did move to lots of different regions. Was that love of country and being on land really important to you?
Yeah, so what happened was Brendan used to work in civil construction, so we would have to move to follow the jobs around. The jobs would normally last 2 to 2.5 years, and so we basically moved anywhere from northern Queensland, which Cardwell, which is basically between Cairns and Townsville, all the way down to Bury, which is about 2 hours south of Sydney, and everywhere in between, and which was great. It was a great way for us to get to explore Australia, and you know, when you living in a place, you get to see all of the hidden gems that the locals know that, you know, a lot of tourists don't get to see, particularly when we're in Cardwell. Like, that holds such a special part in our hearts, because it is rural, and you know, you do have to drive 40 minutes to the supermarket, which is similar to us here.
Yeah.
So that was probably one of our first experiences of that sort of living, and we always, you know, from that experience, we always wanted to have, as our long-term plan, we always wanted to have acreage that we could have cottages on, and Brendan could use his construction background to maintain and manage the cottages.
His own space, yeah,
and then I could run the business and the admin side of it. So that's kind of, it was always a long-term plan. It was just a case of when we made it happen, that, you know, and basically, you know, we had this chat of once we had children, it's not fair. Well, I didn't think, as a teacher, I didn't think it was fair for them to be moving around all the time once they started school. So it was always, let's have some stability, and this was our opportunity to provide stability for our children and our family, but still come back to that nature and, you know, that long-term plan of having that acreage and the cottages.
So for you, was there anything in between being an early educator to owning a vineyard and cottages in Queensland? What did you do in between?
Yeah, so once I had our eldest daughter and I was on maternity leave, Brendan actually had his own business pulling out elevators, which is very random. And so I used to do the bookwork for him. So
lucrative. Might be random, but it's lucrative.
So that was a great learning opportunity for me, because obviously that was something completely different than I had ever done, and I learned a lot of transferable skills. And then after that, I actually went back to uni and did some more studies in nutrition and had an online nutrition business in early childhood. And doing that, I learned a lot of marketing and, you know, email marketing, social media, all
so
of
somebody
those.
Like Stephanie Alexander would have inspired you?
Yeah. Someone like Stephanie. And, you know, again, I just learned so many transferable skills that, you know, I was using at the time, but then I've been able to transfer to a place where we are now. And it's great.
So this place where we're sitting now, like I'm seeing it off season, it's just us here. We've walked around the property. It's absolutely stunning. And it's Mount Barney has won my heart. And Barney Vineyards and Cottages also, we went out to the Mount Bunny Lodge last night and met those guys, and they're just delightful humans.
Yeah.
And it really is a special space, a sacred space out here. But there's a lot of steps to get here, and you had a lot of trials and tribulations from the moment that you obviously saw it online. You got excited, you discussed it, you bought it. You're not from Queensland, but you bought it in, you know, scenic rim country Queensland, if you like.
Yeah.
And then a lot of stuff happened. So let's talk me through the trials and tribulations of getting to Barney Creek.
Yeah. It was definitely an interesting and a challenging journey. So basically at the time it was kind of mid-COVID, and Brendan was finishing up in the lift industry, and we were at a point where we were looking for work, and you know, you're kind of at that crossroads, and Layla, our oldest daughter, was going to start school the following year. So we were thought, you know, this is our opportunity to get out of Sydney again. We loved, you know, particularly living in Queensland at the beginning of our relationship. So we just thought, what can we do? Let's have a look and see if we can find something in Queensland. And I found this property, and it was amazing. And initially it was kind of a bit of a joke of, you know, let's buy that. That'll be fun. We can do that. And then it just kind of was like, well, what else are we going to do? Like, yeah, that's what we've always dreamed of doing. So let's
try. You know that places and dogs choose you. We're not actually in control of that scenario.
Yeah. Oh dear. So what we did, we thought, okay, well, let's go up and have a look and see, you know, does it have the same feel that we think it's got? And so we came up and we had a look, and we just fell in love with the place. And so basically we then came home, we exchanged contracts, you know, all of that thing. But, you know, we had to do a lot to make it happen. I kept saying all the stars have to align. We had to sell our house in Sydney. We had to sell our investment property. We had to just make all of these things happen.
And you find if they don't, the doors keep closing and you're pushing up against a brick wall, then you make another decision. But obviously the doors were opening, right? The house sold.
Well,
kind of. To get you to the point of buying.
Yeah, a few doors opened. So we sold the house in Sydney. We sold the investment fairly easily. And basically then what happened was we were going to come up. We got stuck at the border during COVID. Mm. And so we went and stayed with Brendan's parents 2 hours south of Sydney for what we thought would be 2 weeks. And we ended up being there for 2 months. And every day I was just, you know, trying to find a way that we could get across the border. You know, we're on 40 acres surrounded by a national park. There is no way that we can interact with anyone. We could home quarantine so easily. And we were just trying to get to our new home with our young family. Our kids were 2 and 4 at the time. And, you know, I was on the phone to our local members, and, you know, our local state member, John Krauss, he was amazing. He actually got up in Parliament and advocated to try and help us get across the border. He was such a fantastic support and advocate. And basically we thought we had this agriculture exemption because we've got the vineyard. We thought we had found an exemption. So we packed the kids in the car. We drove nearly 14 hours. We had 2 weeks worth of food so that we could home quarantine. We closed the place off so there was no guests. And then when we got to the border, which is only about a 10 or 15 minute drive from our house, we were told that our exemption didn't apply to us because we were relocating.
So harsh. Like, there are so many bad stories. And we were talking about this before. We've almost forgotten them because we have to for our mental health.
Yeah.
But when you think back, it was just ridiculous, the levels. I mean, you're obviously a young family. You obviously purchased the property and you could quarantine as soon as you got there. I mean, there's absolutely no reason why you can't come across.
And it was very intimidating, you know, like we were in two separate cars because we had all of, you know, we were moving. So we had
separate cars.
Yeah. And then we got to the gate and it was very intimidating. And
for your young children.
Even our daughter said to me, you know, Mummy, I thought police were supposed to protect us, you know, and how do you respond to that, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like a war zone, isn't it?
That's what it felt like. Mm. It really, really did. So we turned around and we had to throw out all two weeks worth of food because it had spoiled from being in the car so long. We turned around and we then went and stayed at my mum's house in Coffs Harbour for another 2 months. And again, I kept trying and trying and trying to find ways to get across and be allowed to just come and live on our property and make this work.
But wasn't there also, in between all that time, you had floods and fire?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so then we basically, everything had gone through and we owned this property and we couldn't get there. So we were running the property from interstate.
It's impossible on 40 acres.
So I was basically ringing guests and saying, you know, guys, I'm really sorry, we can't be there to check you in. I will send you all of the details. The key will be in the door for you.
And that would have been a busy time for you.
It was coming out of the high season, but it was busy, and it was just, you know, we were having to rely on staff that we had never met and just hoping that they were doing the right thing and hoping that they were cleaning to a high standard and maintaining the yard and the property to a high standard.
Well, because I imagine you would have had a mortgage that needed to be paid as well.
We did. So we couldn't say no and close it off. We had to keep things going to pay this mortgage that we had just committed to.
Yes.
So we basically had to run it from interstate. And what happened was, one night we got a warning about 9 o'clock at night that there was flash flooding, and we just had no idea what was happening because we couldn't get there. There's no mobile service at the property.
Guests were on site.
We had guests on site. The power had gone out, so we couldn't ring the landline.
I mean, this is a beautiful environment, but it's very, very isolated.
It is, which is beautiful. But when something like that happens and you don't know what's going on and you have a duty of care and a responsibility to keep people safe.
A liability.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just want to make sure that people are safe and that no one's hurt. So, you know, so we ended up having to call 000 and saying, this is the situation. We can't do anything. We don't know if people are safe. We don't know if anyone's hurt. What do we do? And basically there were other properties in the area that there was so much water. The police were doing water rescues in boats, which is normally a campground and land, you know. So that's how much water there was. I think we got that particular flood, we got 130 mils in half an hour.
Whoa. Yeah. That's a lot, man. And you got rivers
all
around you.
In a short time. Yeah. And it goes up so quickly. So anyway, everyone was safe, fortunately. But I rang, you know, Queensland Health the next day and I just said, you know, we can't even make sure that our guests are safe on our property. You know, this is really concerning for us. And fortunately, they helped us and we managed to get across the border within a few days of that event. You know, because then we had a big cleanup. We had to, you know, clean up from the flood. One of our cottages did have some water go through it. But then we also had a new issue that we hadn't anticipated. And that was the fact that with all of the rain that we'd had and not being able to get across the border for 4 months, none of the preventative sprays on the vineyard had been applied.
Wow.
And so we basically got to our new vineyard and had to cut all of the fruit off and throw it in the bin because it was diseased from all of the rain.
And that, I mean, that's income and that's just heartbreaking.
It is.
Because we are now sitting in a positive situation.
We will finish
with the last dread story, which you only found out yesterday. So this is the life. I wanted to talk a little bit about life on a farm because viticulture to me in Australia is one of the, it is farming. It's one of the biggest exports and trades in Australia is wine. right?
It is.
So,
it's farming.
It's farming. But we don't talk, I don't think we talk enough about viticulture in the same way that we do cattle farming or dairy farming. And we hear a lot about that and the, you know, the drought in relation to that. And then the floods. So how you've learned a lot in the last couple of years. You've learned through a really amazing winemaker who we'll talk about in a moment. But what have you learned in the last 24 hours of, again, losing a crop?
Yeah, so we're basically coming up to harvest season. Last week, I went out to check all of the sugar levels of the grapes, and we were probably about 2 weeks off harvest. We knew, because we had a hailstorm around Christmas time, we knew that we had
some uncanny weather.
We have. And they were giant hail, like huge golf ball hails. And so we knew we'd lost some, but we thought the rest are okay, it's okay. And we'd been doing some extra sprays with magnesium and things like that to try and, you know, coax them along, nurse them along, you know. And I talk to the vines like they're our family. You know, we say we've got 4,002 children, you know, because I just feel that if you give them love, then hopefully it's reciprocated.
Yes.
You know, and so then yesterday I went out to do our weekly sugar test, and we have just had so much rain that basically the berries are sucking up the rain and bursting from too much water and then shriveling. So we actually have had to discard our harvest again this year, which is heartbreaking. We lost probably 75% of our harvest last year to the same thing. Fortunately, the leftover grapes that we could use were a very high quality. And like you said, we've got an amazing winemaker who did his magic, and we came out with some amazing wine from that. But
let's talk about this winemaker, Mike.
Yes, so what happened when we moved here?
So one question I had before you go there is, how do you all of a sudden become a winemaker and arrive on the property? Not only do you have the cottages, you have the vineyards.
Yeah.
And we know your background. How do you guys all of a sudden know how to make wine?
Yeah, so what we did when we moved here, we went up to Stanthorpe. They've got the Queensland College of Wine and Tourism, who work in collaboration with USQ, who I think they've changed their name recently.
Yeah.
But we went up there and we did a weeks long professional development up there. So we learned all about pruning and soil nutrition and all sorts of topics. And when we were up there, we met some amazing mentors. And one of those was our new winemaker, Mike Hayes. So Mike has been around the world. He's worked in 50 different wine regions around the world. He has been winemaker of the year, Australian winemaker of the year in 2017. He's worked for some amazing and big vineyards up here in Queensland, and currently he's working at Balancing Heart near Girrawee National Park.
That good wine.
Yeah, and Mike's amazing. He's very ahead with his, you know, the way of the winemaking techniques that he uses. He's very Mediterranean, al fresco style, you know, because he knows that's what the younger generation wants. Mm-hmm. And you know, he can appreciate that, and it's about what the consumer wants, not just what he wants.
Yeah,
and what he likes.
And just on the Stanthorpe region, like the Ballandine, I mean, you know, being from Mornington Peninsula originally and having lived in Sydney and also overseas, and I visit a lot of regions in Sardinia and Sicily. You know, Queensland's not known for its wines. There's one particular one that sort of came out, and I'll leave the name alone, and I wasn't a fan. Mm-hmm. But Ballandine and these regions are really making good wines. Let's talk about why and what sort of wines are you guys making in this region.
Yeah, so for us, so we've got 4 acres of vineyard on our property. All of the vines that we've got are red grapes, so we make red wine. We've got 4 varieties. So we've got Petit Verdot, Shiraz, Grenache, and Mourvèdre. So a lot of times we'll do blends, and again, it depends on the yields that we get and, you know, the weather. So last year, the grapes that we still had left were our Shiraz and our Petit Verdot. So we basically blended all of the grapes we had together to make a Petit Verdot Shiraz blend.
Yum, that's so European. I love
that. Yeah, it was really nice. And then, like I said, Mike, he's been great. So it was our first harvest, and it was amazing. So we were up at 4:30, you know, we did the harvest, we had a refrigerator truck, drove it up to Stanthorpe to see Mike. We helped him crush his grapes because you have to crush the white grapes first. So he had some white grapes he was doing. We helped him with his crush. Then we did our red grapes. You know, we helped him do some harvest the following morning. Then we did some yeasting, you know, so it was just an amazing experience with him. And, you know, we believe that we need to give back to him as much as he helps us because, you know, once again, it's that community value that we have. So, you know, we try that as much as we can. But yeah, Mike just did his magic and we actually have a beautiful, beautiful wine from last year. We've won 3 wine awards for that one.
Novice wine award.
I know. Yeah. So we, at the Queensland Wine Awards, we won silver for the red wine blend, and then we also won the Stewards Award, which is really special. We actually didn't even know what that award was when we received it, but it's basically all of the people that are working behind the scenes at the awards and at the wine show. They're called the Stewards, and they basically choose the wine that's their favourite.
It's like a People's
Choice Award. It is. It's like a People's Choice Award. Yeah. So that was amazing. Such an amazing achievement for us after everything we'd been through. And then at the Australian Small Winemakers Awards, we got bronze. So yeah, we're super, super proud of ourselves after everything.
I'm proud of you, and I've only met you guys yesterday. And I feel like the family, and I'm very proud of you.
Aww.
So we were talking today after you got the news, or you tested it yourself because you know what to do. What are we going to do with these grapes? And your love of local and supporting local, from the moment you arrived here, you connected to country and community. And straight away, one thing you noticed was, I'm not using cheeses and things from Coles and Woolies and the majors. I'm going to go and find the dairy farmers. I'm going to find the people that make the jam, people that make the hampers. And you go to the markets and you source that and you connect. And that's one thing I really noticed about your property when I came in. We're staying in an old Logan Village railway station hut, which is so cool. And it overlooks the mountains up the top of the hill. But what got me, I've got to say, it was not just the way that it had been renovated, but also this hamper there, which was not, was just, everything about it was local and just so beautifully presented. And I was enjoying that with your sparkling Shiraz Rosé, which I loved. And then I opened up the fridge and there's your branded, and I love this ice cream. It's called, what's that ice cream?
Lick, yes.
I've seen that around.
Yeah.
Because it's got no nasties in it, it's good ice cream.
Beautiful ice cream.
But somehow you'd got your port in there, and it was now called Barney Creek Port Rich Chocolate Ice Cream, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that was in the freezer. So you just nailed that whole experience for me because all the touches were there, but I knew they were local. Because often I can travel in Australia mainly, and they've got everything right, and then they've gone to Coles, and they just lose me, right? And I get it that people are busy. I get all of that. But it's not hard to get to engage with your hamper lady down the road and add that little bit more finesse in and charge the client for it. So tell me about that and finding the producers in Scenic Rim and how that is for you.
Yeah, so again, it comes back to that community. You know, you can see that there's this theme coming through, that that's just such a big value for us. But basically, when we got here, in our cellar door, we've got a cellar door which we open from April to August each year for wine tastings, and we've got a little gift shop in there. And when we first got here, there wasn't a lot of local produce and products in there. And you know, I just thought, this is an amazing opportunity to showcase what the Scenic Rim region has available. So I just started sourcing and reaching out to a lot of businesses, and to be honest, a lot of people didn't even know who we were, but I just explained, we've got a cellar door, we'd love to stock your product because it's local. And so we basically, now we've got a lot of local, you know, we've got local soaps, bath salts, candles, local cheese, olives, chocolate, you know, garlic salts, chutneys, you know.
Because you've got a cellar door and a local produce
shop. Yeah. So we it started there. And then I just, you know, think about the experience of our visitors. And, you know, we had these food packs that we were making, and I just said to Brendan, my husband, I just said, I don't feel like they are what we should be offering. We need to be offering something that's authentic and local. You know, we've got such beautiful produce in the region. So I reached out to one of the local caterers and cafes called Teaspoons and Aprons. So Sinead, the owner there, is amazing. She does incredible food. And I just said to her, this is what I'm thinking. I'd love to have some food hampers that we can organize for the guests that showcase the local produce from the region. Can we make this work? And she's incredible. And everything...
And the presentation is amazing. I got this beautiful. Gorgeous gift card there. I thought it was for you. And I opened it up, it was so beautifully handwritten, and at the end she said, oh, P.S., I made the dips and breads, just to top it off. And I just thought, it's such a finesse.
Yeah.
But you're using your local food bowl.
Yes.
Which you're surrounded by.
And so she does an amazing job. And then it's kind of grown from there. So with the ice cream, you know, there's an amazing dairy called Tomerup's Dairy, and they're actually sixth generation farmers.
Mm, they've got a great name.
Yeah. And they work with Lick Ice Cream in Brisbane a lot, and they produce lots of different ice cream flavors using the produce they grow on site or other local farms. And so Kay, the owner there, and I had this chat about, you know, in the lead up to Christmas, how about we do this port and chocolate ice cream for Christmas, as you know, and see how it goes. And the Jersey Girl milk that they have is so creamy from their farm.
Beautiful.
The ice cream is amazing.
Well, so, I've got an idea for you. So you could use the grape. Which grape would you use in the ice cream if you had a choice?
I don't know.
I think the
petit verdot.
Petit verdot. So, I would eat that ice cream.
So what I'm thinking is with the... I'll come back to the ice cream in a second. I just want to talk about this as well because I'm so passionate about supporting the other local businesses, right? And so what I then decided was, well... You know, I've got these soaps and these bath salts in the shop. How can I bring that into the cottages and enhance the experience of our guests? You know, I'm such a giver, and I just want to keep making everything better for our visitors. Mm. And so I reached out to the local.
I think you know what you like when you travel as well.
It's the little touches that I think you go, oh, that makes such a big difference.
I agree.
And so I reached out to the local soap lady, and I was like, can we make a wine soap? And so, poor little thing, love her heart, because it's got alcohol in it. It was a bit of an experiment, but she made it work. And so we've got these beautiful wine soaps in the room for our guests. And then she's also used our grapes, leftover grape skins, and our wine, and made bath salts.
Mm-hmm. You can move that into candles as well.
It's on the talks. It's not yet, but I have spoken to somebody about that as well.
Yes.
And then also the chocolates, you know, the local chocolate lady, you know, so she does some little chocolate pretzels and things like that as well for the room.
Nice.
So
all those touches meant so much
really
to me
when does.
I opened the door of that gorgeous little railway station last night.
Yeah, it really makes a difference, I believe. So, but coming back to the grapes, so we've got these leftover grapes, which I only found out yesterday. We just, you know, if we're lucky, we might have enough to make 100 bottles, which financially, it's not viable for us. Mm. So, you know, I rang around yesterday and I spoke to a lady who's based up in Brisbane, and she does this amazing work where she basically gets all of the rejected and imperfect produce from farmers that the supermarkets won't accept, and she uses that to make different fruit paste.
What's
and
the name
jams
of her business?
She's the Ugly Duck.
Oh, I love that.
So she makes all of these beautiful fruit paste and jams and chutneys and relishes, and so she's going to try, she's never done a grape jam or relish before, and there's a few little tricks with the seeds, but she's going to see what she can do. So fingers crossed we can make that work. And then also, like you were saying, trying to maybe do another grape ice cream. So
do you know what, you are so solutions focused, which I really love in hospitality, because you've crossed over from educator, marketer, nutrition, and now you are firmly in hospitality.
Yeah.
Let's face it, and tourism. That's what you're doing. But because of your background, you've got a really methodical brain that can make solutions of things. And you've had some hardship in the last 2 years. It has not been easy. I mean, as I said, I'm sitting here today and I'm you know, enjoying the fruits of your labour.
Yeah.
But it's been, you know, a challenging journey along the way. But you guys are up for it. And when I looked in the cottages, you took me through the other ones. How many other cottages do you have?
So we've got 5 in total.
Yeah, and they are really gorgeous. Each one of them is presented in such a beautiful way. Like Florrie's cottage.
Yes.
Tell me about the history of that one.
Yeah, so Florrie was actually a lady that lived in Barney View, which is our neighbouring
suburb.
She would
have been like a farm.
She was. Wife. Yeah, absolutely. So she lived in this particular house for her whole life. So until she was about 94 when she passed away. And when she passed away, the previous owners got it trucked out here and renovated it so that the history could stay in the area, which is really lovely. But she basically had chickens in her backyard. She had a cow. She used to milk her cow to get the milk. And we get people still turning up on our property saying, we came here to see Florrie's house. We knew Florrie, my grandmother knew Florrie, or, you know, she babysat me. Just so many stories. Everyone has a story about Florrie. So she was just, from what I'm told, just an incredible lady and part
the
of the community.
About this land. There is a story the whole way around here. Like, yeah. You've got Logan River running into Barney Creek.
Yeah, so where our property is, where the junction of the Barney Creek and Logan River meet.
And then you've got these incredible crowning mountains around you. I mean, yeah. One of them, the indigenous name of it is
Kai. That's Mount Barney.
Which is this is a good point actually for all my listeners down in northern New South Wales. We have Wollumbin Mount Warning, which is Sleeping Man. This one is the lady laying down, similar style, but pregnant.
Pregnant
woman.
Lady, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. They actually, in indigenous folklore, when they climb to the top of those mountains, which actually have rainforests on the top of them, those peaks can talk to each other from a smoke signal perspective.
Yeah.
So that's a really nice part of this ridge. We call it the Green Caldera. It goes all the way along here. Your property is surrounded by that.
We are. And we've also got Mount Maroon. So we're basically in between Mount Barney and Mount Maroon.
Yeah. Which is, I reckon those storms that come through must be pretty spectacular, are they?
Yeah, it's funny. They either love us and they get stuck in the mountains, or they go round us. It's really interesting. Yeah.
And the creek's a gorgeous place to swim too. Where do you get fresh water like that to swim in?
Yeah, so all of the water is from the catchment of Mount Barney, so all of the surrounding mountains. So it's basically spring-fed and rainwater. Apparently, one of the locals was telling me, Griffith University did a study a few years ago of all of the Southeast Queensland waterways, and Mount Barney Creek was the cleanest water because there's no agriculture, you know, from all of Barney Creek. And it's spring fed, so it's just absolutely beautiful.
What do
water.
You think? So, and you're also on the tourism board now, of course you are, because you're a go-getter, which is great for other people that need to take a rest. And so, what do you see the future for you guys at Barney Creek Vineyards and Cottages? A breath. You see, there's a breath.
That's a really tricky question. I don't know. I just think, you know, for us, it's getting our name out there and working with as many local producers. You know, like, we'd love to have a restaurant here one day where we can have, pizzas using fresh produce and an amazing chef that can do, you know, these cheese boards with local cheese and olives.
Well, we mentioned Cupboards before.
Cupids,
South.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, not far from where your in-laws are in Barrie as well. And, I mean, you go there now and they're just so well established and the restaurants are great. Yeah. I can see you guys doing it all plus more.
Yeah. And I suppose that's the vision is, you know, we used to go visit Cupids, you know, 15, 17 years ago when they were small, kind of like us.
There
so,
you go.
Yes.
So you need to get out and do some research and development because you've got lots more to go. I think it's actually beautiful the way it is, and I think your touches have added such a nice element to this property.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for joining me today and also for hosting me here because it just feels a real privilege to be here.
Well, thank you so much for coming. It's been lovely having
you. I've never hugged on a podcast. Adios.
See ya.